The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Old Trafford Super Showdown. All that build-up, and it was all over in 36 seconds. The pod sighs, adopts an understanding smile, and salutes Sir Alex and Manchester United on the verge of title number 19, and asks, what now for Chelsea? Will they end the summer bin Carlo? Meantime, at other end, all the latest from the relegation battle, as huge win at Molineux keeps Wolves from trapdoor, and in Rovers' game, West Ham looks shaky at bottom after too much samba. We review all the weekend's ups and downs in the Football League 2, from the Championship and QPR, thanks for getting round to that, FA, to League 2, with the most remarkable case of Barnett staying up since Jedward. All that, plus Post, Sid, Milan running rings around the opposition, literally, in the case of Massimo Oddo, and all the rest of the weekend's news in Football Weekly. On board today, new look lineup. Barry Glendening. Looking trim there, Barry.
Am I?
Yeah. Steve Busfield.
Not looking trim.
No, you are. I mean, you know, sorry. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. And Michael Hand.
Hello, James. Welcome. I'll take being halfway between Barry and Steve and the trimness.
It's that kind of fire and ice, tepid water paradigm. Is it
tepid?
Excellent.
That's what I bring.
Tepidity. Let's start off today with the title winners. And modestly enough, I don't mean me, Barry.
Oh, I know what you're alluding to.
Big game at Old Trafford.
But that's not what you're alluding to.
No, that is what I'm alluding to.
They're number one.
Yeah. Not everyone can say that, can they, Barry?
Well, no. I'm more West Ham, number 20.
Are you going to let the listeners in on what you two are talking about?
Oh.
Modestly precludes me from mentioning the fact that James topped the FHM poll for best football pundit/analyst/presenter.
Yeah.
I was a straggler at
number
20.
20.
Yeah.
Yeah, but 30 people below you.
I was sandwiched between Gabby Logan and Eamon Dunphy, which is a horrific image for Gabby, obviously.
Right. Thanks to all the voters. Oh, Sid Lowe was in there as well. He was what, number 34?
30-something. But my equivalent in the same issues, top 100 sexiest women, is a girl from High School The Musical.
Oh, really?
An actress, yeah, who's on the internet with some steamy pics, apparently.
Oh, right, okay. What's her name?
I can't remember.
Is it Vanessa Hudgens? Barry?
That's the one, yes.
Michael, you know, you have some experience.
You know what? My day job is editing film and music, so you talk about High School Musical, not High School The Musical, Barry.
My apologies.
Not Premier the League. You've got to get this stuff right. It's
about
professionalism.
Premier League, the musical. Anyway, now I was mentioning Man United and their complete demolition of supposed title challengers, Chelsea, on Sunday afternoon, which you did the minute by minute for. Nothing to see here. Let's move on.
Oh, it was a great game. The first half was thrilling. It was sort of over in 34 seconds, as you say. Chelsea kind of shot their load prematurely and let Chicharito in to score the gift of them, Manchester United, the opening goal. And David Luiz made a mistake, which incurred the wrath of Carlo Ancelotti. Ancelotti went to give him a rollicking, and Luiz sort of argued his case, at which point Ancelotti got Alex to warm up on the touchline after 3 minutes. So
that kind of afternoon.
Yeah, as it happened, I think Luiz managed to stay on the pitch till half-time and then sort of got a merciful release from his humiliation.
What I wanted to know about that goal was, does Hernandez normally do that praying thing in the centre circle before the kick-off for the game?
I think we've discussed this before. Jimbo's not a fan of such ostentatious displays of piety. But yeah, he
does it
a regular thing.
Has he ever had his prayer answered that quickly?
I don't think so, no.
I mean, you know, from, you know, please, God, can I score today too?
Yeah.
Oh, look, I've scored.
But what's your problem with piety? I mean, in a world where footballers are routinely accused of being impure, surely for them to prostrate themselves before the Lord and ask for his blessing sets a very good example to young people who often wear their trousers too low.
It's a thought that struck me yesterday because I had that immediate reaction to it that Barry mentioned. I thought, you know, this is a bit much. You are a little bit showboating with your faith. And I thought, well, actually, maybe what he's doing, rather than saying, I'm special, look at me, chat to my pal God, maybe what he is doing is saying, look, I do believe, and it's not silly to have faith, which is an interesting and a very positive message to send out to young folk out there.
He's saying, like John Lennon, give little peas a chance.
On the subject of something Michael touched on there, this issue of young people wearing their trousers too low.
Yes.
I don't get that at all. Surely it is uncomfortable.
Moving on. Are Chelsea really going to sack Carlo Ancelotti?
Or is he going to have a new job before they get a chance to sack him?
Are you referring to the Roma rumours?
Yeah.
He would one day. He had happy times there. And but I think he would prefer to stay on at Chelsea at this point. That's certainly...
Does he have any say in the issue, though?
No, I don't think he does.
Well, it's difficult to predict what Roman Abramovich will do, but history would suggest that Ancelotti will get sacked, if not at the season's end, shortly into next season. Hmm. Because Scolari, Mourinho, Avram Grant all sort of got short shrift after failing to deliver what was expected of them. And Ancelotti has delivered even less this year. Hmm. But, you know, it's hard to predict Abramovich's whims.
It was curious in a game on which so much was depending for Chelsea, not least of which, apparently, their manager's job, that so many of their players seemed rather uninterested in proceedings.
And they're meant to like him, aren't they? They're meant to want to play for him. Who knows? I mean, I didn't see it live, unfortunately. I was at the Imperial War Museum, Duxford, looking at large warplanes.
All right. who won?
Well, that's just rehearsing for kind of Neil Warnock's tactics for next season. But watching the highlights, well, it was all... They were atrocious, weren't they? But Man United, the thing that struck me was how many chances United missed, which it's like the Schalke game all over again. They're going to get... They will, as they say, be punished, won't they, if they do that in the Champions League final?
Will they?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll say that with certainty.
I have to say, my prediction proved somewhat wrong at the start of the season when I suggested that Man United might struggle to stay in the top four with that ageing lineup they insisted on. Why, oh, why, Sir Alex, etc. So hats off to all concerned. Barry, you know a thing or two about ill-fated predictions somebody posting in. Let me just find it here.
God. While you're rummaging there, actually...
Where's it gone?
Everyone's favourite former newspaper editor, Piers Morgan.
Where's it gone?
His pre-season predictions were revisited on Twitter today and they make for highly amusing reading.
Oh yeah, what did he predict?
He predicted that West Brom and Blackpool would both be relegated by now. He predicted that Arsenal would win, I think, several trophies, among other things.
They won the Emirates Cup, didn't they?
Oh yeah.
They've got silverware.
All right.
It's been a good season.
Let's try not to mention that name again.
Okay.
On the podcast. So Ford Capri says, forgive me, this has been mentioned already. Didn't Mr. Glendinning have a £20 bet at the start of the season with Sean Ingle that Sunderland would finish above Liverpool this year?
Well, that's actually incorrect. Ah. The £20 bet was that Liverpool would finish outside the top seven.
All right.
So I've lost that
again.
But it's just an annual benefit for Ingle, basically. I make an ill-advised wager at the start of the season and then hand over £20 at the end of the season. I should just hand him £20 at the start of each season.
It's very good of
you. Or save your money, not gamble.
Yeah, wise words there. Now, also on Sunday, and you were across this as well in a kind of...
I was all over Sunday's hot Premier League action. It was great because there was three very entertaining games.
Did you do Stoke Arsenal as well?
No,
but you watched it.
I watched it, yes.
Fantastic. Stoke, have they scored 9 goals in their last 3 matches?
I don't know.
I think they have. What's going on there?
But if they did, James, that shouldn't be taken as consistent because they're really not that sort of a team.
Right, okay. Very exciting way for them to build up. A little bit too exciting in some cases because you did worry about one or two players getting suspensions ahead of the FA Cup final. But a very great, good way for them to build up to the big clash with Manchester City in the FA Cup final.
I think it was a good way for them because you would expect... Perhaps Tony Pulis to put out a reserve team to prevent his players from picking up suspensions or getting injured. And I don't think that's a very wise move because you can't just sort of switch on and off coming up to going into an FA Cup final.
Winning is a habit.
But the thing is, they didn't really have to play very well to beat Arsenal because Arsenal was so abject that they made life very easy for Stoke. And their defending was woeful and... Stoke were well worth the 3-1 win.
Mm. Was it a surprise at this point in the season that Arsenal collapsed like that?
No,
in Britannia?
Not at all.
They've got nothing to play for, have they? I mean, they as the cliche says, look like they're on holiday.
Yeah. And well, they do actually have something to play for because the way things are going, if Manchester City win against Spurs tomorrow evening, they will be just 2 points behind Arsenal in the table with 2 games to go. You might well find Arsenal having to play in the preliminary rounds of the Champions League, which... It does make a difference, no?
It makes a big difference because there's a very good chance you get a very tricky draw.
Yeah, young boys in Switzerland, something like that. Yeah.
And shorter holidays.
But yeah.
Stoke have got the sign over Arsenal, haven't they? They've beaten them four times out of five, and then the one that they didn't beat them in was the one where, what's his name, had his leg broke.
Anyway, there you go. Well, we mentioned Stoke romping towards their FA Cup final with Man City, who didn't have the best of afternoons. Goodison losing 2-1 to Everton. Mancini looking very upset about that. Oh, we did mention that Man City do have another game before the FA Cup final, and that is Tuesday night's clash with Spurs. No Gareth Bale for Spurs. Taken out by Charlie Adam in SEAL Team 6 fashion at White Hart Lane.
Or was it just a little bit clumsy?
Was
I
it?
Mean, no, I mean, why don't we use the acid test on this? Why don't we say, Michael, would you accept an apology from Charlie Adam? Because he did in fact go and apologise, didn't he?
Well, Harry Redknapp said last night in Matchday 2, he didn't say Charlie Adam is not that sort of a player. He did say he's not that type of a lad, though.
He did.
And is not that type of a lad equivalent to not that sort of a player, or is it fractionally different? Does that encompass off-the-pitch stuff as well? So that Charlie Adam is a gentleman off the pitch as well as on it? I don't know.
I think it's a step up. I think it's taking you as a footballer
he's
and as a
better.
Person.
Well, if he's not that type of a lad, then I'd certainly accept the apology.
But the thing is, Gareth Bale is a very, very fleet of foot, and Charlie Adam is very, very not fleet of foot.
Mm.
So it's quite easy to understand how the latter tackling the former could go horribly wrong.
It was more that Bale had already been stopped in his tracks by the first Blackpool player, and he was pinned awaiting Charlie Adam's intervention, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Excellent. It was a good result for Blackpool, although they were dreaming of 3 points for a while. We'll come on to the relegation battle in a bit, but Bale looks like he'll be out for all the rest of the season. He's having a scan today, apparently. Spurs, they've lost their shot at the top four, I think, now. Yeah, mathematically, probably. They did win at Eastlands last season, and they do have a great record against City.
They do, indeed. But I think Harry Redknapp, hasn't he now cited that everything's going really well because he actually wanted to finish sixth?
Right.
So
I think he might be genuine about that, actually.
Well, I don't think he wants to play in Europe next season unless it's the Champions League, so it's unlikely to be the Champions League.
Right. Speaking of playing in Europe, Fair Play League. Fulham might go into the Europa League. How about that? Because you remember this thing of UEFA give three fair play places to the three leagues with the best fair play quotient, whatever it is. And it goes to the highest placed team in the top flight's fair play table that has not yet qualified for Europe. It's Fulham again at the moment. How about that, Steve Busfield?
Well, I think, along with, Hernandez's praying, I think we should be encouraging good behaviour in football.
Good behaviour. Anyway, I think Matthew Guest, producer, that might be the end of part one, in which case, a little bit of music, and then we'll dive head first into the relegation battle. Now, big weekend at the bottom. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, well, now that the league title is as good as decided, there's a lot more interesting stuff at the bottom.
Oh, isn't there? Isn't there? Could all go to the final day, do you think? Or do you think that some of the results this weekend, I'm looking at Wolves with that extraordinary win over Black Country rivals West Brom. Do you think that some of the results this weekend might prove decisive?
Yeah, but there's still a lot of games where they've got to play each other, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Blackpool will be delighted that Manchester United have almost won the title because there's a good chance they'll be playing against their reserves, even though their reserves will probably include the top scorer in the Premiership this season.
Wouldn't the Premier League then fine Manchester United for fielding reserves against Blackpool the way Blackpool got fined?
Well, I mean, Ian Holloway could have an argument about it, couldn't he? But but it'd be quite harsh to find them if they played the top scorer in the Premiership in their lineup as a reserve.
Yes.
There's lots of games between the teams that are down. There aren't there still to go. So Wolves have got Blackburn.
Sunderland. And then Blackburn on the final day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Blackburn, who everybody is saying they're almost safe, they've got Man United and Wolves to play in the last two games. Could easily lose both those games.
They're only 3 points off the drop.
I'm going to make a big call. Blackburn, Wigan and West Ham to go down.
Oh, all right then. The bottom three at the moment read like this. Blackpool and Wigan, who are both on 36 points, and then West Ham, who are now 4 points from safety. Games to come. West Ham are at Wigan next. Ooh, that's a big game. And then they're at home to Sunderland. They just can't win any kind of fixture.
Well, 3 months ago, you might have given them a shout, but I can't see them getting any chance in those. Right, I watch them. They've been dreadful. And Robbie Keane's miss on Saturday. Mm. That is the first time I've seen a sitter from 3 yards go out for a throw-in behind the line of where the player was. I mean, it was just astonishing feat of strikermanship if such a word exists. I've got a friend who's a West Ham season ticket holder who's confidently saying that he was a good player, he would keep West Ham up and get 8 goals in his games. Now, the injury took care of that, but pro rata, I don't think he's managed anything like that. It's still just the one goal, isn't it,
yeah,
on his first game?
No, it's Hitzelberger's goal, so it's about the only thing that's keeping them going, isn't it?
Robbie would be very disappointed with that, because as a young boy growing up in the streets of Talley, he was a diehard West Ham fan.
He was a busy chap, isn't he?
Which team do you think he'll be a diehard fan of from his boyhood next season?
Qatar? I'd say it would probably be, I don't know, Bolton or somebody.
Something from the A-League, perhaps?
Nah, I'd say there'd still be teams in the Premier League willing to give him a couple of seasons worth of big paydays.
While we're on the subject of big performers in the battle at the bottom, how about Gomez in the Spurs-Blackpool clash? What's happened there? Is his confidence just completely gone for the rest of the season, or what? Aurelio Gomez, the goalkeeper?
Well, he saved a penalty, then he gave away another one immediately afterwards. But, you know.
But as he said, he's made mistakes before and he'll make mistakes again. That's always reassuring to hear if you're a Spurs fan.
Right. Now, let me see. So you were making a case for Blackburn going down. West Ham, everybody thinks it's over.
Looking at the fixtures, I can easily see Blackburn losing their remaining two. I can see Blackpool beating Bolton. Wolves have pretty comparatively easy games. You know, they have to play Sunderland, which they could easily win, and their final game is at home to Blackburn. They could send that could be a loser goes down game. You know, did you see Mick McCarthy yesterday was quoting from Monty Python and
I thought
Grail.
That was delightful. I got a little note of it here when he was asked why Wolves haven't produced this kind of performance regularly throughout the season.
Yeah, he said, what's the wingspan or wing speed velocity of the American swallow?
Right, so it wasn't even a proper quote. But, you know, full marks for trying.
I'm surprised that was even on his sort of
radar, culturally?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's probably his generation, isn't it, Mick McCarthy? Mm. Huh?
But don't you think that's rather worrying? I mean, don't you think people who recite Monty Python jokes as if that demonstrates humour are in fact something to be avoided?
Mick McCarthy's funny.
Yeah, and so is Monty Python, Michael. Mm. In places, I'd say it was.
Mm.
No?
Splittest.
Sergeant Bilko says, please can we have a mention of Whitley Bay's historic third in a row FA Vase win at Wembley in tonight's pod. 3-2 winners v Colville. Paul Chan, Lee Curve scored in all three of the finals. It's extraordinary. So they've won that three times in a row.
Such a huge victory that when I was leaving the office yesterday, I saw five guys in Whitley Bay jerseys.
Right.
Hanging around outside King's Cross Station.
Oh.
No, not in that way.
No, they were getting a train.
Yes.
Yeah, not in that way either.
No, they weren't turning tricks. Right. At least I don't think
or
they were.
Or pulling trains. Yeah. They were getting on a train.
Yeah, but I was struggling. Why are they here? Like,
right.
What have Whitley Bay done? And I know.
Yeah.
Well, it was a big weekend for the North East altogether, wasn't it? Because Darlington beat Mansfield in the other one.
I was just coming on to that, actually.
Yeah. Well, I've stolen your thunder then.
No, you go on. You take it from here.
Because we saw a bunch of Mansfield supporters on the tube on Saturday night.
Oh, right.
Who were, you know, who through gritted teeth admitted that Darlington had been the better team.
Right.
With their 119th minute winner. Or it was the trophy or the vase or whatever it is. Yeah. The other one.
Yeah, I just wanted to check. You said FA Vase earlier. Is it FA Vase or is it the FA Vase? Because it's vase in English, isn't it?
It is vase in English.
But
I think it depends where in England.
Is this an American competition, the FA Vase?
No, I think it depends where in England. Right. I think there are regions which talk of vases. Do they not?
Like scones.
Remember
and scones?
A couple of weeks ago we did a pod and at the end of it, Raphael Honigstein asked me,
Is this the worst pod we've ever done?
Yeah. I think we have a new contender.
I disagree with you. Anyway, I'm going
to... I'll be going now, Barry. Sorry. I've got a day job to do.
Oh, no, we are all to blame. Oh, sorry, while we're going off on tangents and a tangerine-related tangent, I was in a curry house in Brick Lane on Saturday night.
Which one, Barry?
I can't remember.
Oh, come.
It was very nice, though.
Yeah, but which one?
It was a Bangladeshi curry house.
That narrows it down.
But anyway, there was at an adjacent table, there was five Blackpool fans.
Oh, yeah.
And they gave me a Sambuca to down.
Did they recognise you, Barry?
No. No, they didn't.
And how did this...
Because I hadn't seen their game against Tottenham and I wanted to... But I'd seen that Blackpool had got two penalties in a minute and I wanted to know why or how that had happened.
Right.
So they explained it to me, but first they made me down a Sambuca.
A flaming Sambuca?
No.
Right. Okay.
It was that's very generous
story.
Of them. So.
Yeah. That's the kind of anecdote that makes this point number one. Okay. I'm Mark. wants to bring things on.
Do you want a better Sambuca related anecdote?
Okay. I heard a better Curry House related anecdote.
So there was some international rugby player, footballer, but he was hospitalised after, for a dare, he stuck his todger in a flaming Sambuca. And obviously it stuck to his skin.
You can't say which footballer, so it's super injuncted.
No, I can't say because I don't know.
A little bit of European news. Imark, continuing his valuable Dutch updates. Dutch Cup finals, you know, this weekend. FC 20 taking on Ajax. 21-3-2 after extra time. That's the first time in 10 meetings in the Dutch Cup that 20 have managed to overcome Ajax, as you know. Steve, they're going to meet again next weekend in the big finale of the Dutch League.
So are they level on points?
Might be, I think. Yeah,
it's quite close at the top.
No, FC need a draw better to win the double. Now, there may be a goal difference issue there, I don't know. But anyway, the only other European league that is yet to be decided, apart from Spain, which, you know, it's all but done and dusted, is Ligue 1. Where Marseille lost 3-2 at Lyon, which means that Lille, they are 4 points clear with the same number of games to go. It's going to go there to the wire. Sid Lowe, hopefully now, might be joining us from Spain. Sid, where are you?
Hello, James.
Hi, Sid.
I'm just standing next to a football pitch, but the noise you can probably hear is that the other side of the football pitch, there's paddle courts. Now, for those who don't know what paddle is, it's basically kind of small enclosed tennis for people who aren't quite good enough at tennis, but it's really big in Spain.
Oh, all right, because they have some good tennis players as well, don't they?
Yeah, but paddle's really, really popular and has kind of emerged out of nowhere in the last 15 years or so. It's I mean, imagine like a squash court because it's enclosed.
Yeah,
you play two against two with a short, more like a bat than a racket. But anyway, there you go.
Excellent. That sounds fun.
Is that the game German men wearing very tight speedos play on the beach?
Not in Spain, it's not. It might well be. How often do you watch German men in very tight speedos playing with their balls on the beach, Barry?
As often as I can.
Yeah. I thought so.
Sid, fascinating though that is, which football pitch is it you're standing in? Is it Real Madrid's training ground or something?
No, unfortunately it's not. I'm at a place called Canal in Madrid.
Ah. Why?
Why? For a game of football.
You're playing football. All right.
I will be in about half an hour, yeah.
Best of luck with that. No world famous managers in the opposition this time, yeah?
I don't know, yeah, because I haven't seen who the other team is, but I doubt it very much. I did play a game of football on Saturday, the first ever three-sided game of football played in Spain.
Was this the famous Philosophers Etc. game?
That's the one, yeah.
Tell us more, Sid.
Stunning. What a sport. So you play with three goals and three teams, and what counts is not the goals you score, because it doesn't matter who gets the goals, it's the goals you concede.
Right.
So you get stages during the game where, well, obviously, I mean, in our case, it was a white team, black team and a blue team, where one of the teams is winning, so the other two teams gang up on them and attack together to attack that team. But, of course, you can never quite trust them, because someone on the other team may pass you the ball expecting you to score at one end, and you turn and dash down the other end and score at the other end. It was philosophical.
Right. The three teams were, Sid, what? Journalists, philosophers, and what was the other one?
It was a mix. It was nearly all a mix of journalists and philosophers.
All right.
I mean, not real philosophers, obviously, you know.
No,
Descartes wasn't actually there. Although a copy of his book was.
That's nice to know. Tell me, the pitch, is it triangular? How does it work?
Well, it should be hexagonal, I believe, but we obviously just played on a normal pitch and kind of tried to pull the wings in a little bit to make it as if it was like that. So it effectively worked as if it was triangular in the end. But it was very, very entertaining, and it's the kind of thing that would be brilliant for training for teams, because it's particularly intense as well.
Is this the kind of, in 15 years' time, will we be looking back on this, like, you know, the paddle of the future?
I'd love to think that I played in the first ever game in Spain and it turned out to be a big sport. To be honest, I doubt it very much, but I'd love to think so.
Did you win?
Yeah, we did. We were 3-0 down and we won 5-5-3.
Right. I don't think Jonathan Wilson would enjoy this sport.
I think he would, because it is eminently tactical. And say, because you've got a degree of playing, you play the game with one team to screw the other team, but at the same time you're looking at a way that you might screw their team while they're at it.
Right. Okay. And how many players are there per team?
Well, in theory it's 11 a side, but the pitch wasn't quite big enough for that and there wasn't quite enough players. So I think I'm right in saying that we played 9 a side.
Right. Are there any plans for further games, Sid?
I certainly hope so. We'll try and arrange it, but you've got to find a hell of a lot of people for it to be possible.
Right.
Well, it's hard enough rounding up, you know, 14 people to play seven-a-side without having to round up at least 21 to play three-sided seven-a-side.
Mm. Yeah, now, quick mention of the Liga. Barcelona 1 point away from the title. Real Madrid in a storming performance this weekend.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed the Madrid papers this morning. Both Madrid papers ran with Cristiano Ronaldo on the cover, picture of him celebrating a goal, and it was like, Ronaldo challenges Messi, and on the other paper, I think it was something like, Ronaldo, insatiable, and it was, oh, and in other news, Barcelona have nearly won the league title. Mm. So Ronaldo getting four goals against Sevilla at the weekend means he's ahead of Leo Messi in the Pichichi table, of course, ahead of him as well in the European Golden Boot, all of which is I think, being presented as a kind of surrogate title for Real Madrid. And I suppose in a way that it's inevitable that it should be like that, and it's not a huge surprise, but it is a little bit odd because this comes off the back of Barcelona taking themselves to a point at which they now only need 1 point in their last three games to be guaranteed league title winners.
All right. And Sid, I know you want to mention, you probably want to mention it really briefly, the situation at the bottom. What is it, 11 teams caught up in the relegation fight?
Yeah, Almeria are now down, and in comic fashion, they drove to Madrid at the weekend to play against Getafe, and they drove back again on a coach. It's around about an eight-hour journey, and what the Almeria players were told by their club was, second division team, second division transport, you're not flying to games anymore. So they got on a bus to Getafe where they lost. That confirms that they're down. They knew they were down anyway because it was, you know, 12 points adrift with 12 points available. They're down. Hercules probably are down as well. But the other place is very, very tight. And I think I'm right in saying that there's 11 teams that can take it. Or is it 11 teams in total that can go down and nine other teams that can take that position?
Don't know, Sid.
Yeah, no, sorry. That's the kind of thing I should know, isn't it, before I start talking to you.
But anyway, a lot of teams.
We've got a situation where the normal watershed of 41 or 42 points probably isn't going to be enough this time. Teams keep on picking up wins. Last weekend, Real Sociedad beat Barcelona and Zaragoza beat Real Madrid, yet both of those are still in trouble. Malaga have won four on the trot, yet they could still be in trouble. Teams that thought they were safe are suddenly looking over their shoulders and thinking, oh, hang on a minute, these teams could actually catch us if we're really unlucky. It should all be clearer by the time I speak to you next Monday, because there's week games this week as well, so we'll have only one game left by the time we speak next Monday.
Terrific, Sid. Listen, best of luck then in your football match. Thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll speak to you soon. On the subject of big European results, should mention Bayern Munich sealing their participation in next season's Champions League with a victory away at St Pauli, who are now down, a victory with eight goals scored to St Pauli's one. How about that, eh?
Hard to bear in Hamburg if you're from the left side part of the city.
There's no amount of sausage trains that are going to make up for a result like that. On the subject of people going by strange modes of travel, I don't know why I was put in mind of, you drive to Madrid because you performed that badly. Italy, when they went to the 1950 World Cup in Brazil, this was just after the Superga air disaster, which wiped out half the team and the anniversary of that was last week, in fact. And so concerned were the Italians about losing the Azzurri in a similar air tragedy that they actually sent them by ship to Brazil, and they basically got really fat because there was nowhere to train. They just kind of jumped around the thing, and they immediately crashed out in the group stage of the 1950 World Cup.
Didn't England go by ship to the 1950 World Cup? And they had a game the day after they got there.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
They weren't very
probably
good.
The America game, was it? But anyway, then the Italian FA, as soon as they crashed out, went, OK, we can fly home then. Don't care what I'm stealing. So, yeah. Anyway, there you go. Speaking
are
of Italy...
Were the Italian FA aware of the Titanic disaster?
I don't know.
There aren't that many icebergs off the coast of Brazil, Barry. Not these days. Not then, certainly. Even before global warming.
There might be these days, Michael, because one
breaking
factor...
up, carving from the South Pole.
Do you know, I was on the beach at Ipanema not so long ago when a penguin came ashore. A penguin.
No. You sure that wasn't a promo thing for Rio, the animated cartoon?
Yeah, that's true. It was a genuine penguin. And what's most curious for me was that one of the beachgoers just picked it up and took it to a penguin receptacle place, because this is not anymore... A rare thing. You know, you have your recycling thing, plastics and batteries.
And the stuff. Penguin.
They have a penguin thing. Penguin bank. Now, I mentioned Italy. If you're not interested in Serie A, I should point out that Barry's got a great anecdote coming up about somebody flying a plane.
That's bugger off.
Which we haven't heard the end of, but we will shortly. But just before that, Serie A saw Milan pick up the title, their first Scudetto in 6 years. Saturday night, 0-0. Wasn't the most inspiring game. At the Stadio Olimpico. What was quite fun was the scenes afterwards. Alexandra Pato having a public kiss with Babs Berlusconi, the boss's daughter. That was fun. Nice, very sweet. And, of course, Massimo Ordo, you've probably seen the YouTube footage of his drunken stumble around the running track there. Apparently there'd been some bet involved. Some people suggested that Galliani had actually told him that his contract extension depended on him making it round within a minute. But no, apparently he was bet by his teammates that he couldn't make it round the 400 metres in under a minute. And with his hair covered in shampoo and very little on, he basically just kind of... He stumbled aimlessly around. He did it in 58 seconds. Is that a good time? I'm not very familiar with that.
If you come with shampoo and drunk, that's not bad for 400 metres.
But he claimed he did it in 58 seconds, but didn't they tell him that he did it in a minute and four?
I think he did do it in...
Well, if you've just played a football match...
He didn't play.
Oh, did he not?
No.
But nevertheless, he was drunk and covered with shampoo.
Yeah,
but that happened after the game.
It didn't look particularly fast.
No, it didn't.
No. And he was, like... waving at the fans while going around. I think he must have taken a shortcut or something.
Kevin Prince-Boateng has promised that that if Milan win the title, he will do a Michael Jackson moonwalk. This didn't happen on Saturday, but apparently that's maybe this weekend when Milan are at home to Cagliari at San Siro.
That's interesting, though, isn't it?
Why?
Who really wants to see him doing a moonwalk?
I don't know. I'm quite curious to see Kevin Prince-Boateng doing that.
No, with his studs on the grass?
I guess no studs will be involved.
If he promised to do a whole Northern Soul routine, that would be one thing. But a moonwalk, I mean, it might be a goal celebration or something.
Yeah.
That's pathetic.
Yeah.
Second rate.
Okay, I'll move on. What's not pathetic is Zlatan Ibrahimovic's run of titles, Michael. Don't know where you stand on the Ibrahimovic issue.
Oh, I don't care about Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Eight league titles in eight straight seasons, five different clubs in three countries. It's extraordinary.
That is.
Ah, did you know...
For such a bad player.
Yeah.
Did you know that Van Bommel has also now won 8 of the last 12 domestic league titles that he's been involved in? Amazing, no? Van Bommel.
It's not as amazing as Zlatan's.
Yeah. Okay. Big Udinese win. They take command in the race for fourth place. 2-1 victory over Lazio, who were in fourth. And I should mention here, Samir Handanovic, their goalkeeper, Udinese, who saved a penalty, really stupid penalty it was, from Mauro Zubarati, who tried to chip him. But Handanovic has now saved 6 of the 8 penalties that he's faced this season.
Wow.
I would say, wow, Handanovic is a great player. If you're Spurs or if you're Arsenal and you think you might need a goalie, I don't know why people don't go in for him. He's a great player.
How many did Paul Cooper save that season, where he seemed to save every penalty? That is even better than Paul Cooper, isn't it?
I think it was 9 out of 11.
Is it?
Something like that.
Mm. Oh, not as good as Paul Cooper, then.
Not as good as Paul Cooper. And Sampdoria, former glories of Serie A, now in the bottom 3 again after being defeated in the Genoa derby by a team with just 10 men. Anyway, still a couple of games to go. Let's move on to the Football League, which is now over. Finished. Don't look for it. It's not there anymore.
Apart from the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, apart from the playoffs. Right. Okay. That apart. Let's see. QPR, they clinch promotion. And you were there, Michael.
I was there.
Let's set the scene.
At last.
Because you all went along to Loftus Road.
We didn't know. We had no idea. We were on the tube not knowing what was happening.
What did you think was going to happen? Most people were predicting that you were going to be dropped down to the playoffs by some swinging points deduction.
I just didn't have a clue. Thing is, so much rubbish was talked in the run-up to that. No one knew. No one knew what evidence the FA had been presented to the tribunal. No one knew what evidence QPR was presented to the tribunal. You know, people like Mark Palios saying they'll be deducted 15 points for fielding an ineligible player. QPR weren't even charged with fielding an ineligible player. Everyone involved in the... Well, everyone commenting on the case in the run-up to Saturday spoke rubbish. So I don't think anyone who is honest had any idea what was going to happen. So it was getting out the tube.
Including the FA, probably.
What exactly were they charged with?
They were charged with economic ownership offences. We don't know the detail. We only know the rule under which QPR were charged with. I mean, I think we're all hoping the FA will actually release the full details of the case at some point in the near future. But the only two QPR were found guilty of were using an agent who wasn't licensed with the FA, though was licensed with FIFA and with several other European football associations at the time. And also charged with bringing the game into disrepute because of that. Now, I had.
So it wasn't a third-party ownership thing?
They were charged with that and they were acquitted on that.
Oh, okay.
That's why there was no points deduction. I mean, all the people saying, why no points deduction? Because they were not guilty of 5 other charges. Is it that hard to understand?
So there you were, heading along to Loftus Road on Saturday.
On Saturday.
Yeah. And then what, about 10 minutes before kickoff?
Yeah, we got out of the tube just before noon and I heard a cheer up in front of me. And when I got to the area outside the ground where all the fans were, the news was going around that no points had been deducted. And it made the chips from Ocean Billy's taste all the better.
Excellent.
But no, the game itself was terrible, but then no one cared about the game. We were all putting the Leeds goals, you know.
Yeah.
just waiting for the end.
2-1 victory, was it for
Leeds? 2-1 victory for
Leeds. But they miss out on the playoffs.
Leeds look a competent team. They're the only team to beat QPR twice this season. But, you know, the odd thing in the Championship this season has been the way so many teams seem to fall away through the spring. I don't know if that's... Teams aren't fit enough in the Championship? I don't know. But Cardiff faltered in the spring. Forest faltered in the spring, but then reclaimed it. Leeds faltered in the spring. Burnley looked like we were going to be up there for a while. In fact, Norwich, an undoubted form team, and people will be thanking goodness that Norwich managed to get automatic promotion because they'd go through the playoffs like a dose of salts if they'd been there.
So what do you reckon when you look at it? It's going to be Swansea against Nottingham Forest.
I think Swansea are the best team of the four in the playoffs.
Okay, and then the Cardiff City-Reading, because Reading do have a bit of form coming into this.
Reading have been in incredible form, but kind of under the radar because they don't have any of the notional big names that Swansea and Cardiff have in their team. But the incredible thing about Reading is that they took Michele Ledgerwood on loan from QPR, who'd been dreadful for QPR, walked into the Reading team, and I think he's remained unbeaten since going to Reading.
If you look at the results of the matches between the four teams in the playoffs, Swansea have 12 points, Forest 10, Reading 6 and Cardiff 5. So Swansea, I think, are probably the best team, but does Forest have the sort of best momentum going into the playoffs, and that usually stands to a team.
I'm sure the English and Welsh FAs are hoping that it's a Swansea-Cardiff playoff final at Wembley. That'd be a nice one to try and organise the trains for.
And the security.
Yeah.
In the meantime, at the bottom of League One, Barry, Preston North End down.
Yes, yeah. And there was... my big anecdote, which is going to be really piddlingly poor now because you've built it up so much. But there was a fun at Deepdale on Saturday because some Blackpool fan went in a low-flying aircraft trailing a banner that said, poor little Preston, enjoy League One, and then landed and affixed another banner that said, we are superior, love Blackpool FC. And... Preston manager Phil Brown was most unimpressed and said, seriously, if I had a gun, I would have shot that plane down. Arrest me now if you want. I found it disrespectful.
I think there's something about Preston. My seven-year-old son this morning when we were walking to school said that he wants to go to Preston just to go to the station and sing, we're going to Liverpool, you're going to Hartlepool. I told him that will be ill-advised. It's one thing to do it when there's 4,000 of you. When it's just you and you're 7 years old, on your own, don't.
You'd be going with him as well, though, wouldn't you?
You'd
give him some moral support.
Do you think Phil Brown is now going to be arrested and charged?
I don't know.
Like the Robin Hood airport case?
I don't know, but it is a strange thing for Blackpool to do when they've got enough things to be worrying about of their own, and they know what the relegation fear can feel like.
It was a joke. It was a bit. I thought it was funny.
Wasn't that funny?
What?
It wasn't that funny.
It's a lot of effort to go to.
I know.
And
a
expense.
Cash-track club as well. Club. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting for a moment that Blackpool actually organised this plane. But, it wasn't like Ian Holloway's idea of a good wheeze on a Saturday afternoon. Apparently, the Civil Aviation Authority are now investigating because it's illegal to fly below 1,000 feet in a built-up area. So the pilot of the plane, who as yet remains unidentified, could be fined $5,000 or sentenced to 2 years in jail.
Has anyone checked David Gower's whereabouts from Saturday?
It's a shame because you could see that. That would be an interesting, little tit for tat rivalry could develop between the two sets of fans, perhaps. You know, of an aerial nature. All right, I'll move on to League One.
See, are you suggesting Phil Brown could then get
aerial
into a Spitfire? Yeah. Sort of.
I'm just thinking that come the last day of the season when Blackpool are Old Trafford, there could be Phil Brown, you know, with a pair of goggles on.
Biggles Brown.
Yeah. In League One, all sorts of things. League One, we knew that Brighton had won. Southampton got the other automatic playoff spot. Automatic promotion spot. Huddersfield go into the playoffs where they will play Bournemouth. And Peterborough will be taking on MK Dons, or the Muck Dons, as somebody suggested they now henceforth be known as. And Swindon went down with Plymouth and Bristol Rovers and Dagenham and Redbridge. In League Two, Port Vale were at the wrong end of a 1-0 defeat. Threshing
at Underhill. We were thrashed, if the truth be told.
That left Barnett over the moon, Steve. You were there.
I was, actually. The second season consecutively when Barnett have saved themselves on the last day.
Why was this such a surprise? A couple of weeks ago, people were saying they looked dead and buried.
Yeah, I think they've been in the bottom two pretty much all season. About 2 months ago, they were four or five points adrift of Burton Albion, who have six games in hand over them. And then they had Mad Dog Martin Allen come along and turn it around for them and then disappear again after 3 weeks
three
at the club.
Games, yeah.
And then Lincoln, who have been in free fall, because Lincoln got 2 points from their last 11 games. So it came to Saturday, and Lincoln, you know, Barnet's fate wasn't in their own hands. If Lincoln got a win, then they stayed up. And it was 0-0 at half time in both games. And then Barnet scored a minute after the interval with a penalty, and there was just, you know, the way Vale have been playing for the last couple of months, there was no way we were coming back into
that.
But
didn't you have seven goals in your last game before this?
We did have we did put seven past Morecambe. Can't remember who it was. We put seven past it last week, but you know, right. But it was too little, too late.
We'd Port Vale's routine 7-0 victories. So frequent that you tend to forget who the opposition.
We spent
are.
A lot of time on Saturday discussing it, because we needed to score, we needed to win by about seven, and the teams who were above us chasing a playoff spot needed to lose by five, and we were discussing whether Vale had ever scored seven in consecutive games.
Right.
We could come up with an occasion back in 1988 or 9 when we scored six in one game and five in the next. But
this is making my curry house anecdotes really gripping stuff.
Anyway, but you know, but Barnet stayed up. They won,
and
it was, you know,
whistle?
A heartwarming story. And you know, and having spent the entire second half saying don't run on the pitch, of course everybody ran on the pitch at the end of the game, and then they said, well, they're not going to do the lap of honour until you get back off the pitch, which they duly did, which I was quite impressed with. Very well behaved fans at Barnet, and then they introduced the Barnet party mix and played a bit of Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling.
For a football match.
Celebrate good times.
There was a great picture in some of the papers today, actually, of two Barnet players posing wearing policemen's hats, which I presume they may end up in prison for if they appropriated them illegally.
But there is actually another good story in League Two, which is Wickham and Shrewsbury.
Right.
Wickham getting the final automatic promotion spot. Gareth Ainsworth, now aged 161, steering them through the season, done a brilliant job. But Shrewsbury fans unhappy about all of this because of the goal.
The goal that wasn't a goal.
Yes, and if it had the Gareth Ainsworth header that was cleared by the keeper, you know, a good 20 yards or so away from the goal line, and got given.
Mark, you're exaggerating.
No, I am. He was clearly in front of the goal line.
Yeah.
Saved the ball perfectly legitimately. A goal was given. If that goal had not been given, Shrewsbury would have gone up this season in the automatic playoff spots.
Instead, I think they're playing Torquay, are they not?
They are.
Yeah.
Shrews fans saying goal line technology would have prevented that. No, it wouldn't, because the ball wouldn't have actually gotten the picture for goal line technology.
There you go. There indeed we go, because I think that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly. Hope you've enjoyed it. I know I have.
Are you being sarcastic?
I'm not being sarcastic, Barry. This is my sincere face. Yeah.
You don't have a sincere face.
I do have a sincere face. You're looking
You
at
have
it.
Many faces. None of them are sincere.
That's not true, is it? Thanks,
we should say farewell to Stockport, too, who, after 106 years in the Football League, have been relegated. And you know, and that was their last game in the Football League.
Well,
so we're going to hope they come back. Unless they come back. I mean, Lincoln and Barnet have both been relegated from the league and come back afterwards. Sorry, I didn't finish my Barnet anecdote, which was which was when they played Status Quo rocking all over the world. That was the time to leave the ground.
You stayed through the Black Eyed Peas?
I stayed through the Black Eyed Peas, but Status Quo was too much.
I stayed through the Quo at Loftus Road.
Yeah.
I'd have had you pegged as a Quo fan.
Yeah. Oh, behave.
We're all Quo.
No, only Quo from the mid-80s onwards. So Rockin' All Over the World doesn't go for. Once you get to In the Army Now, that's when Steve really gets the picture.
Right. Okay. Michael, with your wealth of musical knowledge, not surprising that you pulled out their classic number there.
What can I say, James?
Yeah.
I was told to mention it.
Yeah. Ah, dearie me. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been an honour and a privilege.
Thank you.
I'm going to... Tonight, I don't think I'll even be able to sleep from just remembering Barry's story about the curry house and the Sambucas.
Okay, that's terrific. If you are without sleep, why not go on our message boards and see the rapturous reception you get from our as has happened so many times before for guests on this show. Barry, thank you very much.
I believe Simon Hattonston is still getting counselling.
He's still walking on air. Yeah. All right. Well, many thanks. Thank you, the listeners, if you made it this far. We'll be back on Thursday as ever. Thanks very much, guest producer Matthew Hill. And we'll be back on Thursday. Bye-bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.